This is Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 11, Text Number 19. Translation. At the same time, many hundreds of well-known prostitutes began to proceed on various vehicles. They were all very eager to meet the Lord, and their beautiful faces were decorated with dazzling earrings, which enhanced the beauty of their foreheads. Please repeat. At the same time, many hundreds of well-known prostitutes began to proceed on various vehicles. They were all very eager to meet the Lord. And their beautiful faces were decorated with the dazzling earrings, which enhanced the beauty of their foreheads. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. We may not hate even the prostitutes if they are devotees of the Lord. Even to date, there are many prostitutes in great cities of India who are sincere devotees of the Lord. By tricks of chance, one may be obliged to adopt a profession which is not very adorable in society. But that does not hamper one in executing devotional service to the Lord. Devotional service to the Lord is uncheckable in all circumstances. It is understood herewith that even in those days, about 5,000 years ago, there were prostitutes in a city like Dwarka, where Lord Krishna resided. This means that prostitutes are necessary citizens for the proper upkeep of society. The government opens wine shops, but this does not mean that the government encourages the drinking of wine. The idea is that there is a class of men who will drink at any cost, and it has been experienced that prohibition in great cities encouraged illicit smuggling of wine. Similarly, men who are not satisfied at home require such concessions, and if there is no prostitute, then such low men will induce others into prostitution. It is better that prostitutes be available in the marketplace so that the sanctity of society can be maintained. It is better to maintain a class of prostitutes than to encourage prostitutes within society. The real reformation is to enlighten all people to become devotees of the Lord, and that will check all kinds of deteriorating factors of life. Sri Bilvamangal Thakur, a great acharya of the Vishnu Swami Vaishnava sect, in his householder life was overly attached to a prostitute who happened to be a devotee of the Lord. One night, when the Thakur came to Chintamani's house in torrents of rain and thunder, Chintamani was astonished to see how the Thakur could come on such a dreadful night, after crossing a foaming river which was full of waves. She said to Thakur Bilvamangal that his attraction for the flesh and bone of an insignificant woman like her would be properly utilized if it could be diverted to the devotional service of the Lord, to achieve attraction for the transcendental beauty of the Lord. It was a momentous hour for the Thakur, and he took a turn towards spiritual realization by the words of a prostitute. Later on, the Thakur accepted the prostitute as his spiritual master, and in several places of his literary works, he has glorified the name of Chintamani, who showed him the right path. In the Bhagavad Gita 9.32, the Lord says, O son of Pritha, even the low-born Chandalas, and those who are born in the family of unbelievers, and even the prostitutes, shall attain perfection of life if they take shelter of unalloyed devotional service to me. Because in the path of devotional service, there are no impediments due to degraded birth and occupation. The path is open for everyone who agrees to follow it. It appears that the prostitutes of Dwaraka, who were so eager to meet the Lord, were all his unalloyed devotees, and thus they were all on the path of salvation according to the above version of the Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, the only reformation that is necessary in society is to make an organized effort to turn the citizens into devotees of the Lord, and thus all good qualities of the denizens of heaven will overtake them in their own way. On the other hand, those who are non-devotees have no good qualifications whatsoever. However, they may be materially advanced. The difference is that the devotees of the Lord are on the path of liberation, whereas the non-devotees are on the path of further entanglement in material bondage. The criterion of advancement of civilization is whether the people are educated and advanced on the path of salvation. Om Agnana Timirantasya Gnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Minitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama Shri Chaitanya Manopisham Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swabhadantikam Vandeham Shri Guroho Shri Yudhapadakamadam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sakrajatam Sahagunarapuratam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sabadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagunalalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha. He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabantho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kamchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hare Priye Vancha Kalpata Rupyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Eva Cha Padatanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Varamukhyashta Shatasho Yanai Staddarshano Sukaha Lasat Kundalin Nirbhata Kapola Vadana Shriyaka. At the same time, many hundreds of well-known prostitutes began to proceed on various vehicles. They were all very eager to meet the Lord, and their beautiful faces were decorated with dazzling earrings which enhanced the beauty of their foreheads. So the word varamukhya is perhaps not clear. It's not in the dictionary. But we don't really know what the words mean from dictionaries anyway. We know what words mean because the acharyas tell us. And that's why we have commentaries. Here one of the commentators says, Vare dvare mukham yasam krita sanketana raga manavilokanartham ta varamukhya. The varamukhya, vara means dvara, doorway. And somebody who is always standing in the doorway and looking out on the public in such a way as to indicate the intention of enjoyment, that person is called varamukhya. In other words, as Sridhar Swami clarifies, varamukhya nartakyo veshya iti yavat. Veshya, veshya clearly means prostitute. Harlot, courtesan, I mean, entertainers, public women who are entertainers, we can say. In other words, that's most women in modern society. But these persons can be devotees also. Generally, it's said that a person has to be fixed in piety in order to be a devotee. This is a very unusual purport from Śrīla Prabhupāda, because he seems to acquiesce that even if one is by chance a prostitute or by quirks of fate a prostitute, if that person is a pure devotee, then she can also be delivered. It's hard to understand except by divine grace. Kripasita. So, pranayena snehena agatam sattvasam sambhramo yesham te. They had all arrived with the intentions of, they were full of affection, sneha or pranaya, and they were sambhrama or sattvasam. They were completely confused, means they were running about. Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur says for sattvasam sambhramaha, and another commentator says sambhramas twara iti artha. They were quickly running about trying to get it together to go and see the Lord on their various vehicles. So, although they were prostitutes, it seems they had some love for the Lord. There are various words here used by the acharyas to clarify what is this varamukhya. Garnika, what does garnika mean?
Mathematics.
Yeah, exactly. Just like when we have our computer in Sanskrit, what do you call a computer? Laptop. Garnika yantra. This is one of those neologisms that they've invented. There are some groups that push for the popularization of the Sanskrit language, and they invent all sorts of languages, or they invent all sorts of new words like this to indicate things like computers, which you won't find, of course, in the old shastras. So garnika yantra, something that counts. And a harlot or a prostitute is also called garnika because she's primarily concerned with counting. Is it not? Counting the money to make sure she's got enough, or counting the customers perhaps, or calculating in general. A calculator is also called a garnika. So calculating. A calculating person, we might say, thinks like a prostitute. Something to think about. Vaishya means the same thing. Nata, the word is used. Nata means an actor, dancer, a mime, or a courtesan. Because generally, those who were dancing, until about 100 years ago, respectable families would not allow their daughters to study dance because it was considered the profession of a harlot. And in many cases, it certainly was. Nartaki means the same thing, dancer, actress, or a singer, like that. So, these are some of the things that are clarified here by the acharyas. But it's interesting because Śrīla Prabhupāda indicates that even though they were fallen in this way, they were devotees, and he goes on to tell the story of the famous devotee, Bilvamangala Thakur. Bilvamangala Thakur. There are many stories about Bilvamangala Thakur, and they have varying degrees of rich detail. But the most authoritative and oldest account that we have comes from the commentary on Krishna Karanamritam by Śrīla Kṛṣṇadāsa Kaviraj Goswami. And there he says that in South India, on the bank, on the western bank of the Krishnavenvada River, you know where this is? Krishnavenvada River? Krishnabhimada River, in that area. It's around Satara district of Maharashtra, modern day Maharashtra, maybe around Wai, or one of those places. So he was living there, and he was a great scholar and a very, very good poet. He was also a musician. So somehow or other he became attracted to one prostitute who is described as equal to a kinnari in her musical skill in Sangeeta Vidya. So this is the great weakness of musicians. Musicians have to be careful. Bhagavatam says music is very attracting, but it can lead you in the wrong places, because generally the people who are musicians, we see in every society, they tend towards sinful activity. Therefore, in some religions of the world, music is even outlawed. And even in the Platonic system, or in the Greek system also, musicians were not given a very high position in society. Of course, nowadays, because of the emphasis on the bodily concept of life, the musicians, the entertainers, the actors, these are actually the most prominent members of the society. And we were talking yesterday, if a musician or an entertainer, an actor becomes involved in something, then it's going to be facilitated. It's a good thing that some of them are devotees also. Anyway, so Nati or Vaishya or Varnika, any of these words that are used by the acharyas to clarify what is Bana Mukhya. The prostitutes. And Prabhupada employs the logic here that even in Dwarka, during the personal presence of Krishna, there were prostitutes. And he says that the idea is just like in India now, you see these Sarakari Teka Sharab dukans. In Vrindavan even they have government-supported alcohol shops where a person can go and drink, even though very few places are still dry states in India, but the logic here. They tried to effect prohibition in the United States some 70 or so years ago, and it didn't work because people are attached to these things. In the first canto, it's described that, and elsewhere in the Bhagavatam, it's also described that conditioned souls have a tendency for meat eating, illicit sex, intoxication, and gambling since time immemorial. It's always going to be there in any society. You cannot ever, in this world, wipe it out completely. And that's the logic here. That therefore, it's just like Srila Prabhupada's father used to put out some cloth at night for the rats to eat. He had a cloth shop. And, you know, to prevent them from eating up the merchandise, he would put a certain token amount of cloth in the middle of the floor, and the rats would come and eat on that and be happy. So it's like this. Those who are like rats, or those who are, Prabhupada says here, low men, who are going to go to these things. They're going to go and drink anyway. They're going to eat meat anyway. They're going to chase after women anyway. So it's better that they chase after women who are already polluted, rather than polluting those who are pure. That's a big topic. But anyway, so that's what he says here. It's better that prostitutes be available in the marketplace so that the sanctity of society can be maintained. Why society? Why not the individual? Why not protect the spiritual sanctity of these individuals, these women who turn to prostitution?
Everybody has a free will.
Everybody has free will, also everybody has karma. But the real thing is this, the Sanatana Dharma is not actually sustained on an individual level as much as it's sustained on a social level. That is to say, at least normative dharma. Because the word dharma has many, many meanings. It means duty, it means social obligation, it means your religious faith or practice. These are all normative, practical definitions of dharma. It also has hypothetical definitions. For example, the intrinsic property of a thing. The dharma of sugar is? The dharma of water is? Liquidity, etc. So the dharma of the jiva dharma, or the sanatana dharma of the living being, is to serve. And the perfection of that service tendency is called parodharma, the supreme dharma, which is pure devotional service unto Lord Krishna. But as far as normative dharma goes, on a practical day-to-day level in society, it is maintained more by the society itself than by the individual. And this is a very, very important point to consider. Therefore, the interest of the society is favored over the interest of the individual, sometimes, as we see in this case. So a person, another thing is that a person we mentioned is slave to our own karma. If our karma has cursed us to an abominable profession like that, there's not much you can do to change it. Likhitama bilalate pronsitam kaha sumartha. Means whatever is written on your forehead, you cannot erase. According to the Shastra, our karma, for the proud of the karma for this life, it's written in some sort of indelible barcode that only the devatas can read on our foreheads. and wherever you go, your forehead goes with you, and no matter how you try to escape your karma, you're going to suffer this, whatever is due to you, no matter what. So even if you're living in Dwarka, and even if you're living in the time of Krishna, if that prarabdha karma is there, then you have to do like this. So karma is a very big topic. Karma and dharma, these are two very closely related terms. Actually, in some respects, they mean the same thing. Karma means dharma, because if it's not dharma, then it's vikarma. And if it's the pure devotional service, then it's akarma. So there's no such thing as vikarma yoga. We don't encourage that as a social standard. There is no such thing as vikarma yoga. Some people would try to normatize this sort of situation, and that's not what's going on here. That's not what's going on here. But anyway, actually this prostitution and slave trade, this southern part of the United States is very famous, 100 or 200 years ago for slavery, and other places as well in the world, the Caribbean and small islands in the Indian Ocean as well as in the Pacific Ocean. They brought people there as slaves. Actually, the slave trade is still going on. It's one of the most healthy sources of the world's economy right now that exists. It's like $28 billion per year industry. Did anybody know about that? Mostly it's prostitution. You don't know about it because it's all under the table. It's under the radar. And in fact, it's being harbored, even in very respectable neighborhoods throughout the United States, not just in East Europe or in other places. And it's not just Nepalese anymore either, or, East Europeans or whoever. It's a rampant thing that seems to be out of control. That's why they find, not so far from here, in the deserts of Mexico and Texas, near Ciudad Juarez, hundreds of thousands of dead women for the last 10, 15, 20 years. And nobody seems to have an answer as to where they've been coming from. We don't really know what it is. It certainly is dubious, but we don't know what it is. It's a great epidemic, and it's underreported in the news, maybe because the governments on both sides of the border are implicit, complicit. It would have to seem that way. When things happen, such as a Malaysian jetliner just disappear without a trace, which is virtually impossible, you have to assume that there's some sort of conspiracy going on. I have a friend in Delhi who's was previously a top-level executive for Pan Am in the old days, and he confirmed that there are multiple checks and balances that prevent the possibility of losing track of where a jetliner goes. There's not just one black box, there are many of them. They have different levels of access that different individuals are privy to. So you really cannot lose one unless it's all the way at the top. That's been decided. Anyway, don't want to get too far off topic. But this is, the slave trade is still going on, and this is all because of karma. It's characteristic of this age of Kali Yuga. But even in this sinful age, Srila Prabhupada is indicating here, the real reformation is to enlighten all people to become devotees of the Lord, and that will check all kinds of deteriorating factors. If somehow or other a person, despite the bad karma, can become a devotee, then that is the redeeming thing. That's the only thing that really works, actually. Krishna says this, Daivi hiye shabana mai, mama maya duratyaya, mam eva, ye krapadyante mayam eva tarantite. I carry him across if he has surrendered unto me. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. Because it's difficult. Very, very difficult proposal to actually free ourselves from our own karma. And that's why we find, as Arjuna did, that on occasion we are impelled or compelled or feel that way to do things even that we know are wrong. This is called in the text of the commentary that I was just citing, Hritchaya, the thing which is lying within our hearts. We don't even know what's in these hearts that we have. We don't even know what's there. But when the time is right, when the karma has ripened, it will be awakened and we will be forced to act helplessly. This is what Arjuna is asking. And Krishna says it's possible to overcome this thing, particularly its lust, but also anger and greed, and you know, we all have our own anartas. Krishna says, but by constant practice and detachment, we actually can eventually overcome these situations, but only by His grace. So a nice example of this is given by Prabhupada in his purport with Bilvamundo Thakur. The word is used there in the commentary describing his life. That on one thundering night, stormy night, what was lying within his heart was awakened, and he was overtaken by the irrepressible desire to go and visit this Chintamani, this prostitute. And he went out into the rain, and he walked to the river. He must have been soaking wet by the time he got there. There was no boatman. No boatman in his right mind is going to ferry people across the river on a stormy night like that. So he had no way to get across. But since hope springs eternal, he somehow made it across anyway. He swam across the river, and he nearly drowned doing so. It's described that he had to pull on, he had to hold on to what he thought was a log. What was it actually? A dead body. They become stiff. Sometimes, I actually had this experience one year in Mayapur, that there was something, that there was some rope in the Ganga, and I was curious, so I pulled on the rope, and there was some fleshy, bulbous mass attached to the other side that seems to have been a decomposed body of a human being. When they don't have enough money, they just chuck them in the river, especially in Bengal, because the river is everywhere. Anyway, so he wasn't deterred, and that corpse brought him across the river. He climbed up on the muddy bank, or maybe he probably slipped up on the muddy bank, and continued walking. He came to the gate, it was locked, naturally. Who's going to leave their gate open in the middle of the night? So he was banging and shouting, but over this raging storm and thunder and lightning, who's going to hear him? Nobody. Did that stop him? No. He scaled the wall of the house by clinging onto vines. And one of those vines was not actually a vine. It was actually a snake instead. That too didn't stop him. Now, when he got to the top of the wall, it was so slippery that he fell down onto the other side. And what was on the other side of the wall? A moat. Not a moat, nali. What is a nali? Yes, the sewers. You know, you see them in Vrindavan, those little black things, the black water, and the pigs enjoy there. That's where he fell. And then, you know, finally at that point, Chintamani and her maidservants heard something, and so they came out with lanterns to see what was happening. They found him in this state. And she took him in and she cleaned him up and got him all dry clothes and everything and said, I can't believe you did this. I can't believe it. I mean, you know all the Shastras. And yet still, you will give yourself to lust to this degree. I just can't believe it. And she said, I don't know about you, but I feel guilty about my profession. Because I know that I'm cheating so many men, trying to tell them that I love them, when actually I don't care about anything. I'm just Ganika. I'm counting the money, that's all. But you, I mean, you should know better than this. If you have this much attachment to Lord Krishna, then there's no telling where you would go. You would be attained by Kunta in this life. Because these are the austerities that we have to take up when we perform devotional service. Very severe austerity sometimes. In a world that is not always very inclined to accept devotional service, particularly if we accept the hardship of preaching Krishna consciousness. People are not always ready to be instructed in Krishna consciousness. Because they're here for another reason. I could say some very heavy things that Srila Prabhupada said, but I think I'll refrain. Anyway, so this was, as Prabhupada writes here, it was a momentous hour for the Thakur. And Chintamani is described in that commentary. She sat down with her friends and started glorifying Krishna's pastimes because she was a musician. Bilvamangala Thakur He was listening to that kirtan all night long. Neither one of them went to sleep. In the morning, he paid obeisances to her. He respected her as his shiksha guru, or his varma pradarshaka guru, Chintamani. And then he went along his way to find a bona fide diksha guru. In the Krishna Karnamrita, the very first verse, the very first word of the first verse is actually this prostitute's name. Chintamani jayati soma girir guru me. Shiksha gurushta bhavavam shikidit shimaldi. That means that I offer my respectful obeisances first into my Varma Pradarsha Guru, Chintamani, and also to my Diksha Guru, Somagiri, and then finally to my Shiksha Guru, who is Bhagavan himself. Why Bhagavan himself? After leaving Chintamani's house, Vilvamangala went to this Somagiri, who was described as the king of all the Vaishnavas in that region at the time. He took his Diksha, he took his Gopalaraj mantra from this Vaishnava, Somagiri. And he stayed for some time in his guru's ashram rendering service, but the desire to go to Vrindavan was very strong. And he, even at that time, he was writing so many poetries about Krishna. And his guru, seeing this, gave him the title Lilashuk. He was called Lilashuk, which means he's as good as Shukdev Goswami in describing Krishna Lila. So eventually he took sannyas, and he took permission from his guru to go to Vrindavan. So he was going to Vrindavan, and who was showing him the way to Vrindavan? Krishna. Because we've mentioned, we're telling this story to demonstrate how it's not so easy thing to overcome one's karma. Even after taking sannyas, he was at one place, and he was bathing in the tank there, and he saw a beautiful woman bathing with very just thin cloth, and his mind was attracted. So much so that he followed her home, and she could understand that this man is following me, so she told her husband that this man, I think he's got some ill intentions. So Vilvamangala Thakur was so shameless, he went to the door and he knocked anyway, and the householder answered the door, and invited him in, and they gave him all sorts of service, and he asked, what can we do for you? And Vilvamangala Thakur said, I'm hopelessly attracted to your wife. He told him directly. And he said, yes, Zurur, come. And he told his wife that you should serve him. You should feed him nicely, take your bath, rest nicely, and do anything he wants. The husband himself told his wife this. And his wife actually did that also. She came to him after he was taking his meal, and she appeared in the door, and she stood there looking very nicely. And she said, I'm at your service. And by this time, having seen the behavior of this householder couple, and the incredible hospitality that they were demonstrating, Vilvamangala Thakur had become so ashamed of himself. He said, yes, mother. Please, I only want one thing. She said, yes, anything you want. She said, please give me your hairpins. She thought, this is a very odd thing. Hairpins, what are you going to do with hairpins? So she took out her hairpins, she gave him, and he took the hairpins and he plunged them into his eyes. He said, these eyes have been the source of my downfall. They will never do so again. Are we sincere enough to do something like that? He was sincere enough to hear from a prostitute and to take her instruction. And because there's some scars, they don't go away so quickly usually, he was also sincere enough to take this extreme measure, which he at that time felt was necessary for his Krishna consciousness. Therefore he was blind from that point on. And that is why Krishna took him to Vrindavan. Yeyatha mam prapadyante tansatheva vajamyaham, or what is that? Ananyash chintayantubam ye janaha parinupasate tesham nityabhyuktaram yoga kshemam vahami. Krishna says, if somebody is missing something, I will supply it if he surrenders to me. And that was really quite a demonstration of surrender on Vilvamangala's part. It must have touched the heart of Krishna. because Krishna did take him to Vrindavan. And at that point, Krishna used to sit with him in Vrindavan once he got there. All so many things were being revealed to him on the way, and he was composing so many poems. And it's described by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. Whatever poetry Govamangala Thakur was writing, he didn't write it into any book. He was in ecstasy, lost in samadhi. But those who were accompanying him to Vrindavan, they were taking careful note of the things that he was saying, because he was just in a semi-conscious state of transcendental spiritual ecstasy. And after this revelation of the Lord, and they wrote those things down, and they've been compiled together into his various works. Krishna Karnamrita is one of them, Govinda Damodar Stotra is another one, there's a third called Govamangala Stotra. Many, many different titles, but basically all the same verses. So he was composing these poems also in Vrindavan, and Krishna would sit there and listen to him, singing the poetry. And Govamangala Thakur, through his pure devotion at that point, could understand that Krishna is here with me. And he tried to grab Krishna on so many times. But he's an old man, he's got no vision. It's not hard for an agile small boy to escape his grasp, and that's what Krishna always succeeded in doing. So one time he grabbed Krishna and he was left only with the empty circle in his arms, and he said, Hatam, what is it? Hastam akshitya yatosi balat Krishna kim arbhutam. He said that if you've escaped from my arms, what is the wonder in that? You're a small, agile boy, and I'm an old, blind man. Not anybody can do that. But if you can get out of my heart, then I will count you among the strong men. He knew this child's psychology. The children always want to be big, isn't it? They always want to be strong, and they don't like to be recognized as children. They like to be more old than they are. Just like there's a song by the Braj poet Surdas. So he says, Do bhaiya maiya pe mangata, de makhana roti. That Krishna and Balaram, they come to Mother Yashoda and they're begging for makhana roti. Makhana roti means butter chapatis. Why? Why they? Krishna likes butter, we hear. He likes milk sweets and dairy products. Why does he want makhana roti now? Because makhana roti is a grown-up food. It has extra appeal. So Govamangala Thakur is also telling Krishna, he's indicating to Krishna in this way that I'll treat you as a grown-up if you can escape from my heart. But you have to be really strong to do that. So this is the glory of Govamangala Thakur. His book is very glorious. And the main thing here is that the lesson that we should take from this is that even if the karma pulls us down, and even if we feel it's a hopeless task to become purely Krishna conscious, we can understand that Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami and Chaitanya Charitamrita affirms that Govamangala Thakur was not a nitya siddha. He was an ordinary conditioned soul, like us. But he became purified, somehow or other, by his conviction and his practice of Krishna consciousness and the mercy of the Lord and the devotees. And he became this great acharya who is even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There are very few poets that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu relished as much as Govamangala Thakur. Great, great soul. And yet he was, at one time, he was involved with a prostitute. So, that's another thing that Prabhupada says here. And then finally he concludes that it appears that the prostitutes of Dwarka were so eager to meet the Lord because they were all unalloyed devotees. And acharyas such as Viraraghava Acharya and Vijayatvanchatirtha and others say that they were so eager to have a sight of Lord Krishna that they were moving very fast, and that's why their earrings were shaking. It's described here. Their earrings were dazzling because they were shaking, because they were running around, scurrying about, trying to get it together to go and see Krishna very eagerly. And snehena is described here, pranayena, with love, they were devotees, actually. These are just a few things we can talk about with regard to this verse. But as Prabhupada concludes here, (clears throat) Even if someone happens to be from a sinful background or by chance is obliged to engage in a profession that's not very admirable, if that person at least cultivates whatever degree of Krishna consciousness is possible in that circumstance, that's the criterion of advancement. Because even if you have the best karma in the world but are not a devotee, what is the point? You're envious, and you will fall. And you will eventually have the worst karma in the world, because that's how this world works. Nothing stays here forever. The great poet Kalidas, in his Meghaduta, he gives an analogy. It's like when a wheel is spinning. Sometimes you see these cars that have spokes on the wheels, and when they're spinning very fast, it's just a blur. You can't make out an individual spoke. The one particular spoke is on the bottom of the wheel only for a minuscule split second, and then it's up on the top again. This is the way our karma is working in the eternal scope of things. It's so insignificant. Whether your karma is good or bad, it will end. It will be replaced by something else. Therefore, one of my favorite quotes from Winston Churchill, he said, "If you're going through hell, keep going." Because you will get through it. And if you're going through heaven, do not rest assured. Because there's many a slip twixt the cup and the lid, as Shakespeare said. There are accidents even on royal roads, and you will blow it, like King Mriga. He had everything. He was so auspicious in every way. But he messed up, because the path of karma is like that. So, therefore the real criterion of advancement is whether people are educated in advance in the path, particularly of devotion, because another verse from Nirmala Mangala, he says, Bhaktis Tvais Tirakara Bhavanya Desyat Daivena Haladi Divikishora Murti Muktis Swayam Mukulitanjali Sevate Sman Dhanamarta Kama Gataya Samaya Pratikshaha. That if I develop pure unalloyed devotional service under your lotus feet, Bhagavan, then automatically Mukti Devi is ready. She's standing at my doorstep with folded hands, ready to offer service. And who are the maidservants of Mukti Devi? Dharma, Artha, Kama. And in human life, there really isn't anything more than that. Everything that we would desire is going to be classified in one of these categories. It's either Dharma, which means good karma, or it's Artha, which means wealth, assets, facility, or it's kama, which means your desires are fulfilled. That's usually most people's aim. And then moksha, you're freed from the suffering. This is the thing. So these are all maidservants of bhakti. So all a person really has to worry about in any condition of life is to develop bhakti. And these things we can learn from Bhola Mangala Thakur and also from these prostitutes of Dwarka. Does anyone have any questions or comments? Otherwise, I think we'll end here. Oh yeah, please.
So, Prabhu, undoubtedly there is always exceptions to the rule, but upon taking initiation, we might even attain to Swarga Gatini Vishnu, that the ultimate goal of life is become a pure devotee of the Lord and go back to home that we got there. The Srila Prabhupada, being very liberal, always, but he made no concession of these four sinful activities, carnal sin, meat eating, gambling, illicit sex, and intoxication. So although Krishna has sanctioned in Dwarka, that there would be prostitutes to keep the sanctity or the sanity of society, still, if we want to go back to home, back to Godhead, we have to be free of the Prabhupada made no concessions for sins.
Very good point. And it's when Prabhupada is, I don't want to say, I mean, acquiescing the position of these prostitutes in Dwarka, it goes without saying, but maybe it should not go without saying, that he's not talking about his initiated disciples. Initiated disciples have to follow the rules of the spiritual master. That's a very good point. Anything else? Yes, please.
I just want to ask, so based on what you said about the karma, an experiential perspective, we have free will, but it's only technically true. Still, Prabhupada always encouraged devotees to adopt pure devotional service as much as possible, and he constantly assured them that if you just take to this process of pure devotional service, then everything will be taken care of. That's true. We have to juxtaposition two considerations here. One consideration is that pure devotional service is both very rare and very pure. It's not a cheap thing. On the other hand, devotional service is in fact possible for everyone if they want it. So, the ball is in our court. All we have to do is chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hear from Srila Prabhupada, associate with devotees, and follow the process of Bhakti Yoga. And as much as we desire, we can go back to Godhead even in this life. It is possible. But we should understand that it's not an easy thing. It's a simple thing, but it's not an easy thing. Devotional service is very simple, but not necessarily easy. It's hard only because our hearts are hard. We have an innate opposition to it as conditioned souls. So gradually we become purified, and then we go back to Godhead. That's the normal course of action. Okay? Anything else? Yeah, please.
I understand you're having bhajan on the subject tonight.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, you're doing bhajan tonight?
Yeah, here.
Here at the temple?
Mm-hmm.
What time? 7:00.
8:00. 7:00. Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.
All right.